Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Community Conversations on 88.5 KRFY. This is our new show. We're airing twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m. in place of our regular morning show. Community Conversations provides pre-recorded interviews with different voices in our community and will be the stand-in for our live morning show until it's safe to again bring guests into our studio. I'm Chris Bessler, host for today's show. Today we're exploring the economic impact of the coronavirus restrictions on our local business community. We have four different interviews for you, each about 10 minutes long. First, we speak with the Greater Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce President and CEO, Kate McAllister, about the impact on our local retailers and restaurants and what she sees ahead for our tourism sector. Next, we talked with Andrea Marcocchio. She's the Executive Director of the Bonner County Economic Development Corporation. And we asked her how the EDC is working to assist businesses and how our larger employers are being impacted. Our third talk is with Brad Williams of Williams, Schiller & Steyer CPAs, with some specific business and financial advice for our local businesses, including the Federal Paycheck Protection Program. In our final segment, we talk with Aaron McMurray, Chief Strategy Officer of the Innovia Foundation, which last week made grants totaling $40,000 to 15 different groups in Bonner and Boundary counties. So with that, here's our first interview. Well, hello, Kate McAllister, President of the Greater Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for talking with us today.
Well, you're welcome. It's nice to talk to you as well.
Well, today we're discussing impacts of the stay-home guidelines that our local businesses are observing here in Sandpoint. Mm-hmm. As one who's in touch with a lot of our retailers and restaurants and hotels, how would you describe the situation for them?
Stressful. I imagine, you know, it's just like the rest of us, but I know that they're all very concerned about their employees and how they can help them, how they can keep them, you know, and how they can keep their businesses running after this and what the impact will be depending on how long that they're closed. So, you know, and it's difficult to be in a situation where there's really not a lot of concrete answers. I mean, even the governor surrounded by all the experts really has no idea. So it's just kind of we're all walking around being very stressed and nervous, but they're doing the best that they can. And I've talked to a number of them, like you said, and, you know, the answer has been, we'll get through this. We'll get through this. So we will.
Yes, hopefully, as a community. The community response actually has been pretty heartening in general.
Oh, it's been wonderful.
So this week, Governor Brad Little, he extended his stay-at-home orders through April 30th. And, of course, a lot of retail shops have been completely closed for the past month, and they're facing at least a couple more weeks of that. In your talks with retailers specifically, like the small shops in town, how are they planning to get past this?
Well, some of them are putting some of their products online, like on Facebook. I know LaChic has done a great job of every day they do a little video about what's available in their shop. And one of the things that Sandpoint got ahead of, which I'm proud of, is that we have said you could have curbside, not just for restaurants, but if if I want to go buy something from LaChic, then I call them and, you know, I can go there and they'll have it ready for me to pick up. So they're being very inventive. I mean, a lot of them are doing online, again, Facebook stuff. So they're trying to do the best that they can. And then others are just shut down and going to ride it through and hope for the best when they open up again.
How about restaurants? They have a little different thing since a lot of them can, actively pursue a takeout and pickup service. From your contacts with them, how do you think they're faring?
I think it was interesting because my husband and I decided we would spend our stimulus money on doing takeout at least two or three times a week. And that's the question that I ask each one of them is, you know, how is this going? Most of them have said that the curbside takeout is going much better than they thought it would. But of course, it's not the same as having, you know, their restaurant open and people coming in and sitting down. Like, for example, the Fat Pig, she does chocolate chip cookies. And so I bought 3 dozen chocolate chip cookies and gave some to Kinnick-Sue Health Services and to the hospital. And, and they also have programs. I think it's called Get a Meal, Give a Meal, to help somebody else. And so it's really great to see how they're all coming together. iCards is working with the Eureka Institute as well as Curry in a Hurry to make sure people get fed. So they're being very inventive, and it's really a great source of pride to me to see how our little community and the restaurants in particular are, you know, trying to get through this. You can even buy, you know, you can still go to McDuff's and buy beer and to Matchwood and to Laughing Dog. So some of the world is pretty still happy about that. They're, you know, so they're doing okay, but of course not as well as if their restaurants were up and running.
Yeah, we should mention that the Chamber and Sandpoint Online have posted a directory of retailers and restaurants, and mm-hmm. that gives their changes to operations, and anyone listening can go there to see. I think there are about 140 businesses that are listed mm-hmm. there with notes on, you know, the ones that are closed or the ones that have changed their operations to help to provide the service at the curbside. So mm-hmm. Encourage folks that are listening to go check that out. And you can see it if you go to www.sandpointchamber.org mm-hmm. or sandpointonline.com. Those pages are actually mirrored. And you can connect up with local businesses. And the other thing is any local business can go and add their information to that sheet as well.
Yes, and we've been very appreciative of that partnership because a lot of people have been using that, and a lot of people have, you know, asked where they can get the information, and that's where I send them as well, and it's been working out really good.
So a good chunk of our local economy is driven by tourism in the summer, especially, mm-hmm. And I know you've really been staying abreast with webinars and contacts with the Idaho Department of Commerce and its tourism division. What's the forecast for summer and fall tourism?
So tourism is 40% of our economy. We had a study done in 2015, and so it is a good chunk of our economy. And what the experts are saying, there's a company out of San Francisco called Destination Analyst, and they do nothing but survey travelers. Right now, travelers are really afraid, and so they're not going anywhere. April, of course, everything was canceled. A lot of travelers are canceling things through July. However, they miss travel and they want to get back to it. But they are also going to change the types of destinations they choose. Prior to COVID, the number one destination were travelers going to cities. At least 72% of all travelers were going to some major city or attraction. And now that's kind of flipped. So when tourism opens back up in the late summer, early fall, it's showing that people want to go rural, they want to go to small towns, they want to experience the outdoors. And so that's really great for us where we are. And we've always been really great about marketing our area, you know, just for that, come and get away from everything. And, you know, as you know, our new slogan this year is, you know, do everything and then do nothing. And that seems to be, that'll hit the chord exactly as we need it. You know, they also, since in the interim, the travelers have been taking action to support local businesses where they live. So that's a good thing. But they are, you know, they're afraid. They're afraid to go out and travel. They're afraid for themselves, their friends. But they do see light at the end of the tunnel, and they do want to get out and travel again. And so the state has encouraged all of us. Like right now, the state has paused their advertising efforts because people are reacting right now to active travel ads with fear and disgust. They're afraid, and then they're disgusted that people are, you know, currently advertising. And so we have to approach this very carefully. And one of the things that we're thinking about doing, because the chamber does manage all the tourism in the region, is putting together a virtual sit on your couch tour of Sandpoint and the area so that they can plan and dream now, and then they can come visit us when we're all through with this. And that's kind of our hope, that's what they're going to do. They've encouraged us to be very thoughtful in our ads. And I know on Visit Sandpoint on our Facebook page has been really great because we've just been showing calming photos of our area, one or two people. The one thing they cautioned was don't show pictures of crowds of people, because that just really frightens people even more, is the crowds. And so early fall, late summer is when we're hoping that we're going to start seeing people coming back to Sandpoint and filling our hotels. And so we hope that that's going to happen.
Well, as you mentioned, the focus of a lot of folks looking to get out again and take some trips might turn to the rural areas. And so maybe that's a small silver lining for us.
I think it will be. They're going to be looking for, because they've been shut in like we all have, and they don't have the opportunity, especially those in the metro areas. And as you well know, our drive market, people are going to be driving and not flying. That's absolutely what they have been saying. People don't want to get in an airplane. They want to get in their car, and they don't want to take long road trips. They want to take short road trips. And so our drive market is, of course, Seattle and Portland and the surrounding areas, Spokane. And so we've always been actively marketing to those areas. And I think it shows. And, that's what we're going to continue to market to. And again, when it's all open, then we hope we have room for them all.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what transpires there. So do you, as we got to conclude now, but do you have any words on how folks listening in can help to support our local retailers and restaurants and other businesses?
Absolutely. Buy gift certificates. If you're not a Facebook user, you can locate mostly any business on Facebook. And if you aren't, you can go online, like you said, to Sandpoint Online or sandpointchamber.org. Those retailers that are offering curbside services, just even every little bit helps. Every little bit helps them to, keep their doors open, and so that they'll be here when we get through this, which I hope will be very soon. And, we've been very lucky that we don't have a lot of cases here, and hopefully it will stay that way. And we're all together in this. I mean, the misery and the elation, we're all experiencing the same thing together. And we've always been a resilient little community, and we'll get through this, and we'll be stronger, and we'll know what we're made of.
Yes, this is certainly a test. Well, Kate McAllister with the Sandpoint Chamber, thanks so much for talking with us.
You are welcome. Have a great day.
That was Kate McAllister of the Sandpoint Chamber. Next is our interview from Monday with Andrea Marcocchio of the Bonner County EDC. We're talking now with Andrea Marcocchio. She's Executive Director of the Bonner County Economic Development Corporation. Andrea, thank you for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give us the 30-second elevator pitch on what the EDC does, just for those who may not be familiar with it?
Yeah, sure can. So the Bonner County Economic Development Corporation is a private 501c6 member organization founded and funded and comprised of medium, small, and large business owners who really believe that economic growth depends on collaborative efforts among those who are in business or are trying to get into business. So whether you're a brand new organization trying to get started, or you're Lighthouse Foods and, decades old, the group kind of brings these folks together in a couple different ways. Our main goal is to focus on business retention and expansion, so supporting those businesses that currently exist in Bonner County. And we do that all over the county, so from Old Town to Clark Fork, Sandpoint obviously included, Ponderay, et cetera. And we're really proud to represent some of the strongest businesses who either employ large numbers of people, as well as a number of members who are brand new and maybe are sole proprietors trying to get their feet off the ground. So we work with them kind of in a unique capacity to help them behind the scenes navigate the ins and outs of being a successful business in a rural place like Bonner County.
Yeah, the EDC is a great resource for local businesses. I know that. Last week, Governor Little extended his stay-at-home orders through April 30th, and that's on top of the 21-day closure that was earlier imposed. Can you describe what you're hearing from our local business community about the impacts and how they're getting through this?
Yeah, I've had the privilege of communicating with hundreds of businesses in the past 30 days. One mechanism that we deployed on our website, which is bonnercountyedc.com, is just a page dedicated to both business resources and then a platform for businesses to reach out and tell us what they're feeling and experiencing. We've received a ton of inquiries and just everything that I think many folks can imagine. They're mainly scared of the length of this COVID impact, and they also want to do the right thing, what's best for their employees, what's best for the community at large, to make sure that we're healthy, as well as being able to recover and be a vibrant business. And so we're here everything from, you know, obviously a significant reduction in sales and income, which then leads to things like furloughing employees, closing their doors, and then hopefully coming up with a plan to reopen. And so what we're doing is we're working with businesses one-on-one because everybody's situation is a little bit different. We have done some group calls around topics that were requested, like unemployment benefit questions. I've worked with the Downtown Business Association here in Sandpoint and done a few calls or meetups with them over the internet to try to answer specific questions. But mainly, we're hearing that folks are excited to reopen and get started, but feel like the impact has been significant in the past 45 days to the point where there are businesses who are concerned about reopening their doors. And so we're trying to work with those who are the most vulnerable and provide as much guidance and connect them with the resources like CPAs, bookkeepers, lawyers, et cetera, to help them navigate these tough financial times.
We've spoken with Kate McAllister of the Sandpoint Chamber about the effects specifically on the tourism-oriented business community here, which, as anybody can imagine, that's been pretty massive. You're in that segment yourself with the other hat you wear as a owner of Matchwood Brewing. Just wondering, how is Matchwood faring right now? What do you foresee for your own business?
Well, it's been a ride for sure at Matchwood. We are learning every day how to kind of reinvent and navigate, whether it be new restrictions or trying to implement the highest standards of sanitary practices so that we can continue making food and beer. You know, there's a lot of things on the logistical side that we are navigating every day. As far as how our business is going, we feel like the community has done everything they can to support businesses like Matchwood during these times. But of course, our sales have been significantly impacted just due to the inability to gather in our space, which is part of our mission, is bringing people together and you know, entertaining and kind of creating experiences. So one thing we're looking forward to is kind of this steady, beautiful weather, because as the restrictions are lifted, we're hoping at Matchwood that our outdoor area can be a safe place for people to come and grab beer and food once that's safe, and do that in small groups while exercising social distancing. So we do have some innovative ways that we can both be respectful of, you know, the rules and the things that are keeping our community safe and healthy at the same time as trying to participate as a business.
Yeah, I think a lot of restaurants are trying to approach it pretty much as you are, from what I've heard out there. Outside the tourism segment, the EDC works with a lot of the bigger employers here in town that do manufacturing or provide services such as healthcare, professional services. And they're actually the biggest chunk of our economy. What's the range of impacts on those types of businesses?
Sure. Well, I think I'll just note that Lighthouse Foods is doing well. They've obviously had an impact on the restaurant side of their dressing company, but they are seeing good sales on the grocery store side and are actually hiring right now. Obviously, they are trying to do their part in our community and are participating in lots of different programs to both support the local restaurants and the economy, but also keep up with the production demands that they need. So that's one example. Another great example that is, you know, I think a necessity based on COVID, which we wish wasn't true, which is Percussionaire, a ventilator manufacturer here in town, working on ventilators that were originated, envisioned by Dr. Forrest Bird, and now putting together larger scale orders for entities across the country, and have partnered with regional companies as well as local companies like Daher to continue you know, providing work and meeting the needs of our current crisis. So while we wish ventilators weren't in high demand, Percussionaire is both, you know, doing the work that they do so well using a product they've created, but then they've also been innovative to work with folks like Daher to fly these products to California. So we're excited to be reporting that in the manufacturing world. There are some really positive stories. Obviously, other businesses have been impacted in a different way and not so positively. But we're trying to remind folks that our community is resilient and that we do have really strong businesses here. So if you have ideas on how to collaborate across industries, that's something that we can do, is serve as a connector to pull those meaningful leaders together and try to do positive things.
So I know the EDC received a $10,000 grant from the Innovia Foundation. It's part of the grants that Innovia made to 15 different nonprofit groups here in Bonner and Boundary counties. How will you deploy that?
Yeah, we are really grateful for the contribution that we received from the Innovia Foundation. The first thing we're doing is trying to leverage it for additional funds. And I see it as our job as the EDC to try to continue to move as many resources into our community as possible that can go directly to supporting our business community. And that's what we plan to do. So we have a draft program pulled together that should be announced later this week around providing direct services to businesses in crisis right now. So what we're hearing from small businesses and those who have been asked to step back during this time due to health concerns is that they need advice and they need professional support. But in this time, it's hard to put out dollars to pay for things like hiring a CPA or working on financial projections with a bookkeeper. And so what we're trying to do is identify those professional services that cost money, work with those skilled experts, and then connect them with small businesses, and then cover the cost for those needs right now. So we'll be rolling that out. More details will be available on our website. And then the more money we raise, the more that we can do. So while $10,000 is a great amount of money across, you know, thousands of businesses in our area, we want to make sure that we're having added value and impact that's tangible without diluting it so much. So we're working through that, and we'll be excited to be putting out a press release later on how businesses can interact with that program.
Wow, that's great. One more question. Do you have any words for folks listening in as to how they can help support our local businesses?
Yeah, well, I think there's lots of different ways. I think the first wave we saw the service and kind of service industry affected restaurants and places that we usually normally go and gather. But now, you know, retail shops and other places that aren't allowed to be open are all struggling. So I would just recommend, because we're a small community, it's likely that you know these individuals. So just letting them know that you're supporting them, whether that be with a simple social media post because you can't financially contribute, just reminding folks of our strong business community. And then, of course, going online and participating in the innovative ways that businesses have adjusted. So whether they have online stores or to-go and curbside delivery, just making sure that you're contributing in any way that you can directly to those businesses.
Well, Andrea Marcocchio, Executive Director of the Bonner County Economic Development Corporation, thanks for talking with us. If someone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, if you're a business and you're interested in learning more about some of our services and or the program I mentioned at the end that we're going to be implementing, feel free to go to our website at bonnercountyedc.com. And fill out our affected business survey. That's going to populate you onto a list of businesses, and we try to get back in touch with you immediately within 24 hours, whether it be via email or individual phone call. So feel free to fill that survey out, and we'll be in touch as soon as possible.
All right, Andrea. Well, thanks again.
Hey, thanks.
If you've just tuned in, this is Community Conversations on 88.5 KRFY. And that was our interview with Andrea Marcocchio of the Bonner County EDC. I'm today's host, Chris Bessler. And our show today is on impacts of the COVID-19 restrictions on our local businesses. Our next talk is with Brad Williams of WSS CPAs about specific steps businesses can be taking now, including the federal programs available to help. I'm speaking with Brad Williams with Williams Schiller and Steyer CPAs here in Sandpoint. Brad, thank you for talking with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So we're discussing the impacts that coronavirus restrictions are having on our local businesses. And as an accountant and a financial advisor that works with a lot of our local businesses, what would you say are the top two or three steps businesses might be taking right now?
Okay, well, first, you know, make sure you really understand your business and how this current crisis is impacting you. And be ready to take advantage of the programs that are out there to help. That's the number one thing. The second is monitor and slow your cash burn rate. You know, get a good understanding of your business financial standpoint. You know, monitor spending, look at collections. Just make sure you're doing kind of the nuts and bolts of business financial management. And the third, and you know, maybe most important, is be creative. You know, this is an opportunity. The world's going to be different after this. You know, and think it through for your particular business. You know, for those of you in the hospitality business, this is going to be a hard time, and it's going to stay that way for a while. You know, I think that people are going to react differently after this. You know, probably more people will be comfortable with working from home, using remote meetings, more reliance on the internet and information technology, more reliant on computer systems. So, you know, be creative and be creative in the short run. I heard an interesting ad for an auto repair shop. I'm not sure if it was in Coeur d'Alene or Spokane, but they adopted kind of a concierge model where in order to limit customer contact, they'd go out and pick up your car, take it to the repair facility, do the repairs, and bring it back to you. You know, look at what your particular business can do to minimize the impact of this time. Be creative.
Yeah, now more than ever, it sounds like that's good advice. And you know, I'll echo, as a small business guy myself, that paying attention to monitoring your spend right now is certainly important. So, Brad, you mentioned the federal programs, and monies for the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP program, that has forgivable loans, are already being reported as fully allocated. Do you foresee any chances for businesses to get into that program with possible new funding coming?
Yes. I think that it's quite likely that new funding will be coming. You know, there's a proposal for another $250 billion in funding that's just being held up in Congress at the moment. So I think that's likely, and I would, and there is also another avenue of federal funding that is not reliant on the PPP, and that has to do with payroll tax credits for businesses that have seen large sales declines. And so, you know, that credit program is a little harder to understand, a little perhaps not as immediate, but it's not reliant on these PPP loans. So there is more than one program that can help small business. So make sure you understand everything that's out there. But then on the PPP specifically, I really think we will get more funding, and I would really encourage all small businesses that have not gotten a PPP loan to engage with a financial institution and get ready for that second round of funding, because the second round will probably get allocated relatively quickly as well.
Yes, and I think there have been a lot of local businesses that got stymied in that first round. They shouldn't necessarily think the cause is lost, right?
Yeah. And you know, what we're encouraging businesses to do is to get started now with that application process. And, you know, speaking frankly, many of the local and semi-local banks have not dealt with this well. So there have been a variety of problems, like, you know, they wouldn't accept applications from people that weren't pre-existing clients. They took applications, then did not get them submitted to the SBA in time, on and on. So just, you know, determine if you want to apply, find a financial institution that you're comfortable with, that, that can take your application, will process it in a reasonable time frame, and get that application ready to go.
Brad, what would be your advice for folks that are looking for a financial institution that might help them in process these PPP program loans?
Well, just make sure that you talk to that institution, talk to a loan officer, and make sure that they're prepared to take applications, make sure that they're prepared to submit those applications pretty quickly to the SBA. One local institution that some of our clients have had pretty good luck with is Washington Trust Bank.
And I'm sure there are others as well, but the point would be, you know, vet your financial institution, find a reliable partner.
Yes, and the program is also open to a bunch of the new kind of fintech internet-based institutions. So we've had clients that have had success with lenders like Cabbage, even things that are not lenders like Intuit QuickBooks. So that's another avenue. Be prepared to look outside our local market.
Well, how about for businesses that have been successful getting into the program? Because there are still a lot of questions about how the forgiveness part of the Paycheck Protection Program is going to work. Are there steps that businesses should be taking along those lines?
Yeah, that forgiveness process is going to be interesting. And the requirements for it are pretty much out. I think there's a fair chance that the requirements will change some, but the requirements as they stand are out there. Essentially, on this 8-week period beginning when your loan funds, you are required to be tracking the amounts you're spending for payroll, for utilities, for certain employee benefit costs, and rents and interest on pre-existing loans. And to the extent you spend those things within the 8-week period after your loan is funded, you will do a second application to the SBA documenting those expenditures, and your loan will be forgiven to the extent you expended the money on those items. So, of course, it's somewhat more complicated than what I just said in that 60 seconds. If you have, if you want a document that tells you more about that forgiveness process, you could call our office or email, and we can send out an email that documents the process a little further.
Well, you're in the financial advising and accounting business. If businesses are struggling during this period of time and want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Either call our office at 208-265-5959 or shoot us an email at cpa@wsscpas.com. We are working hard these days, and we're here to try and help this local business community get through this as well as we can.
Okay. Brad Williams with WSS CPAs, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Brad Williams of WSS CPAs. For our final segment on today's Community Conversations, we talk with Aaron McMurray of the Innovia Foundation. And I'm speaking with Aaron McMurray. He's Chief Strategy Officer for the Innovia Foundation. Aaron, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity.
Aaron, for those who are not familiar, can you tell us more about who and what the Innovia Foundation is?
Yeah, absolutely. The Innovia Foundation is a community foundation. And we work with donors and community partners across our region. And our mission is to ignite generosity that transforms lives and communities. And what that means to us is that we have an opportunity every day in partnership with donors, civic leaders, and other community and trusted voices around our 20-county region to help people establish funds, preferably endowed funds that create charitable earnings that are available to make grants out to nonprofits. And we do that work, as I mentioned, across 20 counties, including the 10 counties of North Idaho, and Bonner and Boundary counties are included in that.
Yeah, and you, of course, have been very active in Bonner County, I know, for years with different organizations.
Yes, absolutely. We've loved our partnership up in Bonner County. We've had actually a long and great partnership with the Equinox Foundation, which many of your listeners will probably already know. And really appreciate our relationships with nonprofit leaders and donors who have been very involved in Sandpoint and the surrounding communities in Bonner County.
Aaron, so when the coronavirus outbreak began, Inovia almost immediately launched with partners, I know, the COVID-19 Community Response Fund. Can you tell us more about what that is and what it's intended for?
Absolutely. Yes, I'm glad you mentioned the partners. This fund was made possible because of a group of really generous funders and community partners who came together very quickly to address this need in our communities. That group included Equinox Foundation, the Avista Foundation, the Lewis Clark Valley Healthcare Foundation, and it also included the Idaho Community Foundation as our partner to ensure that the grant dollars going out of our respective funds would be well coordinated. We knew from the outset that even if the number of actual cases of coronavirus in our region were relatively small, that the impact of the outbreak in our communities would still be really difficult nonetheless, from a number of perspectives. Of course, we've already seen the economic impact, but also the social impact, the mental health impacts, and just the overall damage this has done in our communities, and in particular to vulnerable populations who we knew were likely to be disproportionately impacted by the outbreak. So the group of funders came together with the goal of raising charitable dollars to rapidly deploy and get those dollars out in the form of grants to nonprofits who are trusted in our communities and are working on the front lines to serve our most vulnerable populations who are hardest hit by this outbreak. And the response has been really incredible. We've been able to raise over $400,000 for our North Idaho Community Response and Recovery Fund. And when you add that up with the fund in Eastern Washington, that total dollar amount raised between the two funds is over $1.6 million. So we've just been really encouraged by not only the collaborative effort between that group of funders, but also the generosity of our communities to help establish these funds.
And so last week, Inovia announced it's making grants to 15 different organizations in Bonner and Boundary counties, totaling a little more than $40,000. It's going to be distributed to those groups. And I'll mention just a few of them. The Bonner County Food Bank is one, Food for Our Children, Helping Hands, Healing Hearts. Also food banks in Priest River and Bonner's Ferry and Clark Fork. And quite a number of others. How do you hope these organizations will be deploying these funds?
Thanks for that really good question. And I think one thing that's important to clarify is that this first round of funding was really intended to address the immediate needs that have emerged in the early phase of this outbreak. We're calling this the response phase. And you know, it's important to note that the funders who came together to create this fund really were intentional that the fund was called the Community Response and Recovery Fund. And it's our goal that the fund will continue as long as our communities and vulnerable people within our communities are struggling as a result of this outbreak. And we recognize, frankly, that the recovery phase could be longer and more painful and more difficult than the immediate response phase. So in this initial phase of grant funding, which you just referenced, nearly $40,000 to all of those great organizations, our hope is that the nonprofits will use those grants to address immediate needs that are emerging right now for people who are really struggling as a result of this outbreak. We know that there are food security issues. We recognize that issues related to housing insecurity and homelessness, to domestic violence and child abuse, and to caring for elderly people or people who are struggling because of geographic isolation. All of those issues tend to be exacerbated during an outbreak like this. And so we identified intentionally nonprofits that we knew were working very locally in our communities, from Priest River to Bonners Ferry to Hope and Clark Fork, and of course in Sandpoint, who are right there on the front lines and well respected for the work that they do serving those vulnerable folks.
You mentioned this as the first round. There'll be an additional round coming up.
Yes. So the total that I mentioned earlier, just over $400,000 that has been raised, is for the 10 counties of North Idaho. We granted out just over $200,000 in this first phase. And our hope is to circle back up with the funders and begin to look to a second round of grants as we begin to move into the recovery phase. One of the things we'll be focusing on is trying to understand what are the new issues and challenges and needs that are emerging in our communities, and then to work with the groups that are advising the grants out of these funds to direct grant dollars in this next round where some of those new needs and issues are emerging. And I don't know yet what the dollar amount might look like in that next round, but one of the things we hope for is that as partners and generous people around our region begin to see the impact of this fund, that the fund will continue to grow and that there will be dollars there to continue to grant out as long as is needed to help our communities emerge out of this outbreak.
Aaron, one more question. Can people who are listening in right now who may be more fortunate participate or chip into this fund?
Absolutely. Thanks for the question. It's very easy to contribute to the fund. If your listeners want to go to anoviafoundation.org, and if they just click on the Give Now button, there is an easy drop down on our giving page, and you can select the North Idaho COVID-19 Community Response and Recovery Fund on our webpage, or at any time you can send a check into our office or call the Anovia Foundation office. And all of our contact information is there as well on our website at www.anovia.org.
Well, Aaron McMurray, Chief Strategy Officer with Anovia Foundation, thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks, Chris. It was my pleasure to join you.
If you've just tuned in, that was Aaron McMurray of the Anovia Foundation. And that wraps it up for our show today. Community Conversations will be back next Tuesday, airing at 8 a.m., and then again on Thursday at 8 a.m. Each show is also available to hear after airtime on our website, www.krfy.org. I'm the host today, Chris Bessler. Thank you for listening.